Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
All right. Well, you've probably heard about the fact that I'm having my latest book, The Physician's Guide to Money and Life. It is available right now. Now, of course, you can buy it from Amazon, but if you want the best deal possible, what you're going to want to do is buy it from me by texting DocBook. That's DocBook. That's one word, DocBook, to 44222. Or, of course, you can go to the website, which is drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. Now, I'm offering all kinds of bonuses with this. Make sure to check out the website, send the text, and we'll shoot you right over so you can check it out. Hello, my friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. And as you've heard in my quarterly updates, we are on this mission to explore and try and look at different income streams. And I'm so excited for our next guest. He is a blogger. He is a podcaster. He is someone who has gotten in the land business. But besides land investing, he also does residential real estate. So he does the combination of the two, which is something I inspire to do. He is the founder and creator of retipster.com, and his name is Seth Williams. Welcome, Seth.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Hey, so glad to have you here. I think what's fun for me about these podcasts, I don't know if you feel this way too, but you get to meet people who inspire you. Okay. And it's an honor to have you on because you're someone that inspires me in what you do, and you have some really great stuff on RE Tipster. So thank you so much for having that resource.
That's awesome to hear. Thanks a lot, Dave. Appreciate it.
So Seth, walk me through your journey. You told me before we got started here that you started in the real estate business in 2008. So what were you doing pre-08?
Yeah, well, actually, 2008 is when I got into the land investing business specifically. Prior to that, I think the year kind of when it all started was around like 2005-ish, somewhere in that neighborhood. And I was in college at the time. I read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it just kind of like made sense. Like for the first time in my life, I started to get, you know, money and how to generate wealth and just how to be wise with your finances and that kind of thing. And one of the things that the author Robert Kiyosaki talks about a lot in this book, I'm sure a lot of people out there have read it or heard of it. One of the things he talks about a lot is real estate and real estate investing, but he sort of talks about it like in, you know, not like terribly concrete terms. He's not like giving you specific instruction on what to do. So, you know, I was reading this stuff. I'm just like, okay, real estate. I got to get into real estate. I got to start figuring this out. And man, I spent years trying to find a real estate deal that would make sense for me to buy, either to flip or to use as a rental property. And at the time, you know, 2005, 2006, 2007, real estate prices were just crazy. And, you know, I spent so much time looking at properties on the MLS, trying to find a deal that would make sense. And the numbers just never worked. Like no matter what I did, no matter how many properties I went and visited and looked at, like I just couldn't find a deal where it would make sense for me to invest my money in that. And like it would never produce positive cash flow and I'd never be able to make a profit from it. And it was driving me crazy.
So let me stop you there for a second. Yeah. So when you were looking at properties, where were you looking? Were you looking in your local area? Were you looking across the country? You know, what was that like?
Yeah, I was looking in my local area. And my local area was Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is actually, like when you compare it to every other place in the US, it's a relatively inexpensive market. But still, like in terms of the cash flow, like the numbers still didn't work in terms of like what I could have gotten for rent and factoring all the other costs into it. And it was just a really hard time. It was, you know, very much a seller's market and difficult to find great deals, which is actually, honestly, like as I talk today in 2018, that's kind of how it is today too.
I was just thinking that. Yeah. That's it feels that way. I mean, you look at particularly on the coast. I don't know what it's like in Michigan. Here in Minnesota, prices really aren't like atrocious. I mean, they're back to 08 type levels, but it's still affordable. Mm. Whereas out in California, you pay $900,000 for a shack.
Yeah. And absolutely. And it's one of those things where I think really there are always deals out there that you can find, but especially in times like right now, you have to know where to look and you have to look where nobody else is looking. And if you're just limiting yourself to the people who have gone through the motions of enlisting the help of a realtor and putting a for sale sign in their yard, I mean, those are people who generally care about getting market value for their property, and they're not just going to like give it away for nothing. And you know, that back in 2005, 2006, that's really all I knew. I figured those are the only houses I can buy. So those are the ones I have to look at. And it was very, very frustrating because there was nothing to be found at that point.
So when you were calculating the numbers, like you were looking for net cash flow positive, meaning that, you know, let's say you could get $1,500 rent and your mortgage and expenses were like $1,000. And there was nothing out there you could find that was like that, huh?
I did not find anything. Really, the only properties that, because it wasn't just the cash flow, that was certainly an important part of it, but there was also what little money I had available to invest at the time. And I had very, very little. And so, you know, I also had to be able to afford the thing with a conventional mortgage. Again, not understanding alternative financing options that were out there. I just had a very limited scope of what I could even look at and consider. So the only houses for the most part that I was looking at were pretty nasty, disgusting houses in war zone areas of the, of town. And like, I got to tell you, it is like the grace of God that nothing worked out, because like it would have been a disaster if I had bought anything like that at a price that didn't make sense. I mean, just in every way, it would have been going backwards from day one. So sometimes I think this is actually a Donald Trump quote I heard years ago. Sometimes the best deals are the ones you don't do.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Totally. So at that time, what were you doing for your day job?
Yeah, at the time, let's see, I'm trying to think, in 05, I was still in college. 06, I graduated from college. In 07, I got a job working for the Pepsi Bottling Group. And about a year after that, I got into the commercial banking industry. So, I mean, either way, it was kind of like entry-level income for a recent college graduate. You know, I mean, making more than probably a high school graduate, but still not making a lot. And it was, I really just had limited income. And I think there's still a lot you can do with that if you understand where to find deals and how to do creative financing and things like that. But I understood really none of that for the most part. After doing a lot of searching online, just for different ideas on how to invest in real estate, how to find different opportunities, I finally came across this sort of a combination of ideas. First idea was the idea of investing in vacant land, which seemed like, I mean, I think most people can probably relate to this. When you first think about the idea of investing in land, it's just like, what? Land? Are you serious? Like, what are you supposed to do with that? That's weird. Okay. Like, where's the cash flow? There's no tenant. I don't get it. And I didn't really get it either at first. But it wasn't until I understand specifically like how to go about finding vacant land deals and how to find them for like very, very, very cheap. Like we're talking, like, for example, the first deal I ever did, it ended up being a half acre lot that I bought free and clear for $331.
Nice.
And then I sold it a couple weeks later for $1,900. And you know, that was a very small deal, but honestly, like, given the amount of money that I had at the time, and especially like my wife was never a huge fan of like debt in any form, like just not a good idea, especially not when you're speculating on real estate and you never know what's going to happen. But the beauty of being able to buy vacant land for almost nothing is that, first of all, it's a very simple type of property with very little that can go wrong. There's, you know, there's no tenants there. Nothing is going to get stolen or broken or destroyed. And also, when you can buy it for a few hundred dollars, I can literally just use the cash in my bank account. It doesn't have to be a lot. And there's no loans. There's no monthly payments that I have to worry about. And the amazing thing about this whole strategy is, like, when you buy something for so cheap, I mean, take anything. I mean, this just happens to be land we're talking about, but the same thing applies to, like, cars or jewelry or precious metals. I mean, you name it. when you buy anything for next to nothing, and it clearly has a value that's much higher than that, it's not hard to turn around and sell the thing and make money from it because of this huge, you know, basically just free chunk of equity that you get in the deal when you acquire it. It just gives you this huge, you know, built-in profit margin that protects you. And yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, I don't want to sound like cheesy or anything, but like, it's honestly hard to lose money when you acquire it right and when you understand the approximate value of what you're buying in the first place. So
walk me through, Seth. I think we definitely were on board with the idea. We love that idea of buying low and selling high, right? Yeah. I mean, that's essentially what we're doing. So where for you, how did you find the first deal? Was it on Craigslist, or did you send out letters, or how did those first couple of deals come about for you?
Yeah, well, really the first thing I ever did to find the deal was specifically I got, I refer to it as a delinquent tax list. There's lots of different names that you can refer to this as, but it's essentially, it's a list of all of the properties and property owners in a given county that are currently delinquent on their taxes. And this is often confused with something called a tax sale list. And there's a really important distinction to make, because a tax sale list is generally, it's a list of properties that have already been seized by the county and they're going up for auction. And basically, in order to buy those properties, you have to show up at the auction or you have to bid online. And, you know, not all the time, but in a lot of cases, you're up against a lot of competition. And the prices of these properties can get bid up. And it's just, I don't know, in my opinion, from a few experiences I've had, it's been harder to get deals. However, the list that I was getting, the delinquent tax list, is the list of people who are currently delinquent, but they had not yet had their property taken by the county. And the thing about this is, like, every county in America has this list in some way, shape, or form in their system, because every county has to keep track of who is current and who is past due on their taxes. And really, at any point in time, whether they realize it or not, a county can generate this list for you. And essentially, it's just a list of all the properties, all of the owners, all the owners' mailing addresses. And once you have this list, it's kind of like a gold mine, because like what I did, I sent out postcards to all of them and just said, hey, you know, I see that you own this property in this county and I'm looking to buy a property in this area. If you want to sell it, give me a call. Like, it was a very simple postcard. I recorded a pretty simple 2-minute long pre-recorded voicemail message so that people could understand what I was doing and hear me out, and then leave me a message if they wanted to talk more. And it worked very, very well. Really, the response rate that I've normally gotten on those is like the minimum would be about 5% of people responded. And I've seen it as high as like 18-20%.
Oh,
like,
wow.
The best case scenario. And ultimately, the response rate isn't really what matters. What matters is the close rate. But still, I think, like, because you are dealing with a group of people that has a known issue in common, they all have delinquent taxes. And, you know, most of them are aware that if they don't pay these taxes off, at some point, they're going to lose this property and get nothing. Like, all the equity that they have into it is gone. So they have the option of paying off their taxes. Some of them maybe can't afford it, and some of them don't care enough to do it. And they just don't want the property. It's not a big deal to them. And the other alternative is to sell it. And really, if they sell it for anything, it's better than just losing it and getting nothing. So it's totally feasible to make offers that are just like crazy, like very, very cheap. Usually, like, the offer ranges that I'm making is around like 10 to 20% of what I think the property's market value is. And and don't be around me, a lot of people say no. And I'm sure you've probably experienced this too in the land business. I mean, some people are going to think you're absolutely nuts, but that's okay. I mean, really what you're looking for is that small segment of society that just doesn't care and they're happy to let their property go and get, you know, a little bit of money in exchange for that.
Well, a couple of funny stories. My favorite return letter, so I send out more 8.5 by 11 size, you know, type letters rather than postcards. And so someone goes and they write they write back on the letter, stick it in an envelope, put a stamp on it, you know, send it my way. So I go and I get it and I open it up and look at the letter. I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe it's a return letter. And lo and behold, it says, kiss my ass over the letter. So I shared it on Facebook and I was just amused. It's like, I must be doing something right if I'm pissing someone off.
Yeah, and I've heard that a lot worse.
Oh, I'm sure. But on the other hand, I think what I actually look at this business, in a lot of ways, it's helping people. Mm-hmm. Because on the other hand, I had someone that his wife had passed away. And he was about to get remarried in his late 60s. And he's been wanting to sell this land forever, kind of had it on and off the market. Mm-hmm. And it was a nice lot that had power, sewer, water all on it. And it's probably worth $15,000. And I bought it for $3,000. And he said, that's my honeymoon money. And he was so excited and grateful for it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a great opportunity to help people and at the same time profit, which is what I love about this business.
Yeah. I've heard some people get really bent out of shape, as I'm sure you have too, about getting a low offer. But there's really a lot of psychology behind this, because when you think about it, like, you're not forcing anybody to do anything. Like, all you're doing is presenting them with an option, whether they think that's a good option or not. Like, that's cool. Like, that's their decision to say yes or no. And you're really not going to know what people will accept until you just make the offer. That's the only way to really find out what's going to happen. There's a lot of people that are like overjoyed to be getting a little bit of money for something that they thought was just a lost cause and they were just going to totally take a bath on. So, it's kind of thing where, you just have to do it and not take it too personally, which is hard. I mean, I actually had a mail campaign I did, it's probably like late 2017. And like, I got to tell you, the amount of like vicious hatred that I got back from people, it was like particularly bad. Like, it was like one of the worst I think I've ever gotten. I don't know what was wrong, but it got to me. Like, it really bothered me. But at the end of the day, like, when you're looking at the numbers and the dollars and cents, like, it really doesn't matter. People can be upset or they can do what I would do, which is just like blow it off and throw it away and move on with their life. It's kind of a mind game you have to work around in this kind of business, because that's definitely part of the package when you're sending out lots of really low offers like that.
Well, and here's two of the big things I want to bring up. One is kind of the time problem. And so I'm curious to gather your thoughts on the time issue, because what we're doing here, I actually think of it as a lot like cars. You know, you're doing a lot, we're being like car dealers in the sense that it's a lot of smaller transactions in many cases. I mean, I suppose maybe at your particular stage, maybe you're doing some larger deals, but you know, as you start out in this business, you're buying stuff, like you said, for 300, 400, 1,000, 2,000 bucks, kind of tops, mm-hmm. you know, and you're trying to turn around and sell it for 4,000, 5,000, 10,000, $15,000 tops. So it's a lot of transactions in a lot of cases. For me, at least, I've done a lot of owner financing with a couple of cash deals here and there. And so there's the time problem of you have all this paperwork, you have all these buyers and sellers and your website and putting things up and taking things down and putting ads on Craigslist or Zillow or LandWatch or Land and Farm or wherever else, Facebook, wherever else you can think of. And so there's the time issue. And then the second thing is, because if you're doing owner financing, you run into a capital problem. So let's talk about the time thing first. You know, walk me through your journey, Seth, in terms of doing this all by yourself, the kind of where you're at now and the help you've hired along the way.
Yeah, man, I admit that is a very big bottleneck and a pretty big challenge. I mean, possibly one of the biggest challenges a lot of people have to figure out. And kind of like you were saying, it sort of depends on where you're coming from. Like, some people have more time than others. Some people have more money than others. When I was getting started, you know, at the time it was just me and my wife, we had no kids yet. And, you know, I wasn't somebody that watched a ton of TV. I mean, it's pretty much what I did when I got done with work, is I came home and I worked, you know, a lot on the weekends. And that, I definitely do not spend that kind of time today. Like, my wife just doesn't allow it. But in the beginning, like, that, that time, that margin I had available was like super helpful just to understand like, where is my time best spent? Where should I not be wasting my time? I've changed up my direct mail process a lot. Like I used to just send out postcards and I'd invite people to call me back. We'd have a big conversation. Then I'd make an offer. Then they'd say no. And now it's, it sounds like it might be a similar thing that you do, where I'm just sending out blind offers to people. And that's an approach you can take. It generally costs a little bit more to get the lists and to get the mail out the door. It just, there's kind of a constraint there, but it can save you a ton of time versus like having all these conversations that lead nowhere. So things like that, just like fundamental changes in how you do your marketing. Another thing that this is actually sort of a recent discovery for me. There are different CRM systems out there. Some of them are better than others. I think for the most part, and when I say CRM, I mean customer relationship management, basically just ways to automate your communication with people, keep track of conversations, kind of like not go crazy with all the details that are flying all over the place. And I think any CRM system can be helpful, but some of them are way better than others. There's one that a guy named Howard Zonder. Have you heard of Howard?
Yes, I have. I have spoken with Howard. I haven't, checked out his stuff, but
Yeah, I'm actually like just now getting into it, so like I'm pretty green on this. But he's got a system that he put together using Podio. He calls it Land Speed, where basically, I think the struggle I've had with it so far is there's a little bit of a learning curve to it. Like it's not just idiot proof where anybody can figure it out. It kind of takes some learning. But if you're willing to invest that into it, like, man, it automates a ton of stuff, like the getting of the list, the sending of the mail, filtering leads that come in, filtering closings and transactions and posting on Craigslist, like a lot of this stuff. It just streamlines the heck out of it, which is a very, 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 very helpful thing. And I think it's like $200 a month, maybe a little bit more than that. So it's not like a nominal cost. It's fairly expensive, but I mean, if you've got a higher volume land business, if you're doing more than a few deals a month, I mean, I think it's pretty important to get that or get some kind of brilliant system running on your own, because you will go nuts if you don't have that.
All right. Well, let's take a pause here for a second and go to our commercial break. Well, if you are like some members of my audience, you are committed to being an amazing doctor and succeeding at life. But the truth is, you've never had all this financial training during medical school, and you're just struggling with enough time to do it all. Well, my friend, over 2 years ago, I started on this journey of writing my next book. And it was a book for residents and fellows, and I reached out to a few potential authors, and Amanda Liu joined me on this journey. Finally, it is available, The Physician's Guide, The Young Physician's Guide to Money and Life. It is packed with pretty much anything and everything you want to know as a young physician. Millionaire mindset, debt payoff, buying your first home, and contract negotiation. Now, of course, you can pick it up at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any major vendor. However, if you want the best deal possible, you are going to want to get it from me by texting DocBook, that's all one word, DocBook, to 44222, or going to drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. Now, why am I suggesting to do this? Well, it's because I am offering the sun, the moon, and the stars when you buy it directly from me. Because not only will you get a physical copy of the book, for only about $25, $24.95, you are going to get the following as a bonus. Of course, the physical copy of the book, an electronic copy of the book, an audio copy of my other book, The Freedom Formula for Physicians, all of the episodes of The Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, over 4 seasons worth of material, and you're going to get an electronic copy of the newest edition of the Tax Reduction Prescriptions. And on top of that, you're going to get a whole new write-up on my journey in land investing. You're going to get exclusive content on that as I am going forward. My friends, this is over $100 retail of priceless knowledge. Are you ready to pick up this book and all the bonuses and get all that financial training that you've desired? You're going to get it from me by texting DocBook. Again, that's all one word, DocBook, to 44222. or going to www.drfreedompodcast.com/docbook. To snag your copy now, text docbook to 44222 or going to drfreedompodcast.com/docbook. And now, back to the show. So what have you been doing? So if you haven't been using that system, are you like, you've been using like a lot of Google Sheets, or like how have you been keeping track of everything that you've got going on?
Yeah. Well, I think for me, what has been super, super helpful is that I've kind of shifted away from doing tons of volume, and I'm doing like a handful of big deals per year. And when I say handful, I mean anywhere from like 6 to 12 deals total per year. And that's super helpful because, and I mean, part of why I decided to do that after doing my first few deals that netted like 40 grand or more a piece, I started realizing like this took about the same amount of time and effort to do this one deal as it would have taken me to do a deal that made me like $2,000. So, I mean, there's that huge benefit to doing that. However, I'll say I've heard from a lot of people who are like, yep, that's what I want to do starting out. I'm just going to go after the big ones. But I don't think it's quite that simple. The reason I'm able to do that is because I spent a ton of time learning the business with the small ones and making my little mistakes on those.
Yes.
And that's, I think when you're getting started, like, especially that first year, like you're going to learn a lot more than you earn. And there's a lot that you learn from doing even the tiniest of deals. And that's just an important part of your education when you're getting started. And once you've done enough of those, it's not hard to transition into the bigger ones and follow a very, very similar process. And another reason I'm able to do those big ones is because I've got tons and tons of leads coming in. And I really do have the ability to cherry pick which ones I want to do. And when you're just getting started and you have nothing, it's, I mean, I guess you can try, but you're going to end up throwing away a lot of, you know, decent opportunities that just happen to be smaller. And I think the people out there that I've encountered who make like into the millions in the land business, I think part of the reason they're making that much is because like they do not discriminate. They go after everything, like, and not everything, but you know, they're not afraid of little deals versus big deals. Like they'll take it all. Whereas I've kind of chosen, this is not going to be a $1 million business for me. This is going to be something that earns a really healthy income and is not going to consume my entire life. I'm going to stick to these handful of deals per year, and I'm really happy with that income, and I don't need more than that.
Interesting.
So it's for me, it's been choosing to do smaller volume of bigger deals, which it just takes a few years to get to the point where you can do that easily.
So how do you think about, you're not trying to scale up really?
Yeah. I mean, when you say scale up, what do you mean by that exactly?
Well, like for example, maybe you were aiming for like $50,000 a year, first year income, and then you wanted to make it like a $1 million business, mm-hmm. right? Like, do you still aim for it to be like a $1 million business or with the large deals that you're doing? Or is it, you know, hey, I'm good with 300K and I don't want the hassle and the stress of a $1 million business?
Yeah, I'd say it's more the latter. For me, the land business is something that if I needed it to, it by itself could support me and my family. And that's really what I'm going for. Like, I want something that can do that and requires no more than, you know, 5 hours a week, maybe 10 on the busiest of weeks. And that's what I'm happy with. And yeah, I mean, I'm not somebody who needs to make $1 million a year from this thing in order to be happy. And that's just not, it's not really what I'm after. For me, it's more about the freedom to be able to do what I want, when I want, and go where I want, and not be shackled to this business with golden handcuffs, you know?
So with that, you know, I kind of look at my situation and, you know, it's, I'm in the process of hiring a bunch of virtual assistants and people to do the work for me, cause it's taken up a ton of time because I'm doing more of the small deals, right? In my first year, just like you suggested, you know, the selling them for 4K to 10K on the high end, maybe 15K every so often. Which a lot of those are note payments, which add up over time. Mm-hmm. And so the good news is I have a bunch of different streams of income. The bad news is it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. So on your end, do you have any virtual assistants, or are you just doing everything yourself because it's not that much relatively amount of work versus a bunch of the smaller ones?
Yeah, I do have, at this point, I have one virtual assistant, but she's doing mostly stuff related to like my blog and website, mainly because I get like hammered with like hundreds of emails every week from people, and I just don't have time to sift through everything. But in terms of the land business, yeah, I wouldn't say I've done the best job of hiring VAs when I should have. Like, I think that's a smart thing to do, and I should have done more of that. But yeah, I have never really had a full-time virtual assistant running the show for me. And I think, especially in the beginning, that cost me a lot, like in terms of my time. And at the time, I could afford to do it. But like, even now, you know, as you get older, you kind of realize the value of time and like how fast life goes by. And I look back, I'm just like, man, it's just a shame how much of my time I wasted just spinning my wheels on stuff. So I would recommend it. I mean, if you're serious about what you're doing and you want to make it a big business, I think you're on the right track in terms of getting help. But yeah, I think it works for me now because of my smaller volume and because I can like have my fingers on everything, especially with bigger deals where like mistakes matter a lot more. Like if somebody makes a mistake with valuing a property and they're like $50,000 off, like that's kind of a big problem. Like if anybody's going to make that mistake, I want it to be me, not just somebody I, you know, offloaded the issue to and didn't really pay close attention to the details. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it works for me, but, if you're, you know, I know a friend of mine who sounds kind of similar to you in that, like, he just jumped into the business and just kind of went crazy with it, sending out like, you know, 10,000 mailers a month.
Oh, I'm not that crazy.
that's
too many.
It's probably like the most extreme case I've ever encountered, honestly, just in terms of somebody who like really was not, they were not kidding. Like they really wanted to succeed with it. And like, I don't think you can do that without hiring a VA or two to help you out. I mean, just when you talk about, I mean, you know how time consuming it can be to like post stuff on Craigslist and renew stuff and respond to people who want to sell. I mean, it's like mind numbing after a while. And it's stuff that's got to be done, but it's also like, it's, you know, $10 an hour work. It doesn't need to be you doing that. It's not like it takes some brilliant, you know, mind to click those buttons and do it over and over again. So.
Well, I think part of it for me too, is just what do I enjoy doing? Yeah. Right. And putting stuff on the website and doing the Craigslist ads and all of those kinds of things. I really don't enjoy that much. But on the other hand, in the little bit even that I'm outsourcing, the part of the issue becomes I feel more and more disconnected from it. So I don't have my finger on every little pulse in terms of what may have been going wrong as much as you try and manage it. So I think that's kind of the struggle of going the opposite route is all of a sudden now you're depending on other people to help you run your business, even though if you know how to do it, like in your situation, you know it in and out, you know every single piece of it. I think.
Yeah, and it's kind of, I'm realizing this more and more with like the blog that I've been running is that's kind of, you know, gained momentum and more people have been interacting with that. I remember back to the early days when I started that and like, there was nobody reading it. It was literally just me posting stuff and, you know, nobody cared. And when you're at that level, like it's no problem for me to do everything. Like it sort of allows you to get lazy in a way in terms of understanding and really defining what your problems are in the business because you just don't have to worry about it. There's not really anything that's happening. But yeah, as you grow, it becomes really important to understand like exactly what you're saying. Like, what do you enjoy doing? Where is your time best spent? And you kind of realize the importance of finding good talent and, you know, keeping them on board and investing into them because it's kind of like a second version of you out there in the world doing this stuff. So, I'm curious, where are you finding your VAs? Are you going to like Upwork or something or?
Yeah. Well, one of them, she helps me in one of my other businesses. So I kind of brought her in because she does an awesome job And so I knew I could count on her for more higher level stuff. Mm-hmm. Like we've done some marketing on Facebook, and I don't want to do all of that myself. And I found it's helped me to sell properties quicker. Mm-hmm. Of course, the problem is it takes away from some of the margin of the business, but I'm okay with that because mm-hmm. it frees up some time. But I'm a little more selective with her, but I'm kind of making her more, I'm moving her towards the role of overseeing the VAs and being my right-hand person. My wife and I are celebrating 15 years of marriage this year. Right. And so next year I'm planning on going to New Zealand for 3 weeks, but still that's almost a month that I'm going to be gone. So I'm trying to get her trained up to be able to handle everything mm-hmm. while I'm gone. Yeah. So that's kind of my...
Yeah, it's a pretty remarkable thing when you can find somebody who's that good and competent, and probably more importantly, that you've taken the time to train that well so they actually understand what they need to do.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, when you can trust somebody enough to like leave them in charge, even for a few days, is an amazing thing to not be a slave to your business. I think it was Ralph Waldo Emerson, I think, who had a quote where he said, a man is wealthy in proportion to the number of things he can afford to let alone. Mm-hmm. So that's something you come to realize the busier you get.
Absolutely. Well, let me get to the capital side of it. So yeah. At $300,000, $500,000, $1,000, you know, one or two of those isn't so bad for most of us. But how did you run into the capital problem with this business where you have all these potential deals, but you can't necessarily do all of them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what's that journey been like for you in the land business?
Yeah, it's a frustrating thing, isn't it? Like when you've got opportunities pouring in and like you sort of have to say no to them because you either don't have the cash or you don't want to tie up all your cash in that. I was pretty big into the seller financing thing for my first probably 3-4 years, I think. And I mean, getting the monthly payments coming in was really, really nice. Like I loved that part, obviously, but it started to wear on me when I would get people that would just like flake out and just like stop paying and just go silent. And it's just like, come on, man. Like if you tell me you're going to do it, then just do it. Like if you're not going to pay me, then don't buy the property. Just like, I don't know, that flake out mentality is so not the way I am. And it really bothers me when people do that and it costs me. And so for me, I sort of intentionally started moving away from seller financing. I don't do a lot of that these days. Mm-hmm. I'll consider it. Like I'll keep it on the table if that's literally what needs to happen to sell a property. Like I'm not vehemently opposed to it, but I don't like push for that as the primary exit strategy. So usually what I'm doing is I'm listing them for cash for a lot less, like usually 50-ish percent of market value, maybe even less if I need to. It kind of depends on like the dollar amount that I want to make from the property. And I mean, in the perfect scenario, they sell within like a month and I get my money back and I can keep the ball rolling. And that does happen a fair amount if you sort of pick a market where things are moving and it's not terribly difficult. But other times, you know, it ties up your cash for 6-9 months. And for me, I mean, when I get to a point where I've just sort of exhausted the cash resources that I want to invest in it, I'm basically just kind of waiting until something sells. And I don't do more mail. Like I just kind of wait until my inventory is sold off or a good portion of it is. I'm not immune to that. I mean, if it's something where, you know, a property has to sell in order for me to keep moving forward, then my business is kind of on hold for a while.
Interesting. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, because I just did a bulk deal where I bought like 8 or 9 properties at once, which was great, but it tapped me out on my cash. So I said, I'm not going to be mailing at all the next couple of months, which some people say, oh, you should always be mailing. But if you're not going to have the capital, you know, why keep on stressing yourself out too? You know, like I got to the point where it's like, I'm just tired, mm-hmm. you know, and it was stopping not to be fun anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's something to be said for slowing down sometimes, mm-hmm. And then moving fast other times. So I don't know.
It is very, very possible to burn out in this kind of business for that exact kind of reason. Like you want to see the ball moving forward and you want to feel like you're growing and getting better. And like, you just can't because you're stuck and something is not working because the property's not selling. And I think it is one of those things, like in my experience and in most of the experience of most of the people I've talked to, that is pretty much the biggest bottleneck is the selling process. Like finding the deal is generally not that hard. And I think there's actually, you have more control than you think you do on the selling end. One thing that is super powerful is picking up the phone and, you know, thinking creatively about, okay, who is this really most ideal for? And finding people who might, I mean, legitimately be interested in that rather than just sticking to like Craigslist and Zillow and Facebook and just kind of posting and praying and hoping that people will see it and respond. Like, get people on the phone and say, hey, I've got this opportunity. Here's what I think it might work for you. What do you think? And doing things like offering, you know, special pricing if they buy it this week or something like that. Even for the people that you're selling properties to on seller financing, I mean, say if you want cash back out of one or two of those properties, you can start offering them the option of, hey, if you pay off, you know, this month, then I'll take 30% off the balance that you owe or, you know, whatever. I mean, you can do whatever you want to do. You could look into like selling notes too. I've never actually done a lot of that, but I get offers from people who want to buy my stuff, right? I used to when I was doing a lot more seller financing and, you know, you could explore things like that too. I mean, there's really, that's really kind of the beauty, especially when you own these properties free and clear. Like, there's a lot of creative things you can do to get cash faster. You just have to be willing to explore those options if you need to.
Right. Well, I'd even throw out, rather than selling the notes, I would rather just get like a 0% interest rate credit card instead, because that's a low point of leverage. Because at the end of the day, you're using leverage when you're selling a note, which you're going to owe somebody money that you need to pay. And so if that comes at a cost of 10, 15, 20%, why not just do it for, you know, zero or a transfer balance fee up to 3% or something? I mean, to me, that would just make sense. But I think you really have to have a good handle on the business. That's something I'm going to explore perhaps down the road as a way to continue to lever up, because I figured for about $10,000, you know, I could probably generate a monthly income of about $1,000 a month. So I think it could work if the economy holds up okay. But as you mentioned, people do fade away as well on paying the notes and stuff like that. So
have you experienced much of that?
Nothing yet. Thank goodness. But I'm sure it will come. Everyone tells me it comes. So I am prepared for it to come, depending upon the economy. I think right now the economy is strong, and so it hasn't been an issue. Any thoughts, Seth, on doctors with their time? You know, if they want to get started in this kind of business, knowing that time is a big issue for them, and perhaps if they're younger, as a resident, fellow, or medical student, money could be an issue for them perhaps too. But I think for $300, it shouldn't be that much of an issue just to buy like one or two or three properties, for example. But the time side of it, any thoughts on someone starting out, how to structure that if time is a big issue for them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I don't think I've ever been, like, at least not consistently, in a situation where I was working like 80 or 90 hours a week. Like, I think I've had that like maybe a few weeks in my life, but that's not like a regular thing for me. So I mean, if that's your situation, that's pretty tough. I think if you're working like 60 hours a week or something like that, or maybe you're just doing 40 and your time is just torn between lots of different responsibilities and family engagements and things like that. You know, I think one thing to keep in mind, I hear from people all the time who are in one of two camps. They either have money and they want, you know, they basically want to find somebody who has the time to do the land business and they basically just to be an investor on the back end, or they have time and no money and they want like the other side of it. And it's, I've actually thought about doing this in my membership site, is putting together some kind of, you know, mastermind groups for people based on what position they're in, because I know it can actually work really well where the person with the money will, you know, basically get, I don't know,
50, 60%, maybe 55, 45 split. And the person with the time will go ahead and just chase everything down and do the business. And like, kind of like what you're saying, like you have, you know, capital constraints. And I know I've had that too in the past. And that's like super frustrating. And it would be like an amazing gift to have somebody who has more funds to contribute. And you can kind of keep the machine going and keep making money from those deals too. Whereas other people who, you know, a doctor who has plenty of cash to invest, but none of the time, I mean, that would be the perfect situation for them too, is finding somebody that they trust mm-hmm. to run this kind of business. And there's all kinds of different ways you can structure it. You know, you can start an LLC that both people are, you know, members of, or you can create some kind of profit sharing agreement, or you could even like co-own properties. I mean, there's lots of different ways you can do this to make sure that, you know, you don't get in bed with somebody who's going to be a hassle to you in the future. Say if you don't really know how good they are, like there's ways you can kind of mitigate those risks too. Cause I know I've tried different partnerships in the past that have kind of flopped, and that's something I was kind of hesitant about, but it's one of those things where it's like, there's usually a way to make it work. You just have to get creative and do a little bit of networking and find the people who have what you're missing and vice versa. And, I will say though, I mean, I still think it's important to at least like go through the process at least once or twice, even if you're not going to be the person spending all your time doing it. Like it's a lot better to like there's so much, as I'm sure you have experienced, there's so much you learn just by doing and, you know, making missteps and having conversations with people. And, you know, it's really, really beneficial to have that kind of knowledge versus just like saying, well, here's the money, you go do it, because you, mm-hmm. you don't really understand what's happening. And mm-hmm. you know, if somebody wants to get into a deal that isn't actually good, it's helpful if you know how to identify that and how to make your own assessments on that versus just flying blind and trusting somebody to make good decisions with your money. So I would say at least give yourself the margin to like go through the process yourself a few times. And I mean, along the way, you'll probably figure out what things you do and don't like about it and what things you're not good at. So
I think those are great suggestions. Well, I think what I would add to that too is if I was to be someone who told me they had those constraints, I would look at investing in some place that had pretty cheap land. Like you can go to places in New Mexico where you can easily pick up lots for $100, $200 and, you know, turn around and sell them for $600, $2,000, mm-hmm. you know, that. And I think if you just sent out like 100 mailers a month, you know, a very small amount that maybe you could get done in like an hour or two that month, that would almost be kind of where I would think would be a great opportunity for someone to start.
Yeah.
So they could buy land really cheap, you know, not have to put a whole lot of money out, but they could get the experience, just like you said. Mm-hmm. That's what I would do.
Yeah. Yeah. I know my first direct mail campaign was 106 postcards. And it was, I had six people respond to that and didn't end up doing any deals from that first one, but still like just the process of like getting the list and sorting the list and put together the mail campaign and answering the people that called and like researching the properties and sending out the offers. Like there were so many things I learned from that first quote unquote failed attempt to find a deal. And the second time around, when I got my first deal, I had only sent out, I think 300-ish postcards, and it was way easier just cause like I had already been through the process once and it wasn't such a foreign thing. So even if like the first one doesn't, you know, produce anything, like you can't lose sight of how much you're learning in that process.
Great suggestion. Well, we're running out of time today, Seth. And of course, you have the blog and the podcast on RE Tipster. Anything else you want to point people to on the blog and podcast that they might want to check out?
Yeah, I just, you know, I'd invite anybody to come check it out. There's a ton of stuff. I've spent literally thousands of hours posting like lots of content on there. The vast majority of it is completely free. You know, I want people to kind of understand how to get past a lot of the obstacles that I was stuck on when I was getting started. I've also got a membership site where I teach all this stuff as part of a course that's at retipster.club. But you know, I don't think that's in any way a prerequisite to succeed. I think if you check out the blog, You'll find a lot of helpful info there. And if you want to take the next step, by all means, check out retipster.club.
All right. Sweet deal, man. And where else can people find you and reach out in case they have more questions?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. There is a contact page on the blog. I will say I've got lots of different messages coming at me every day. So there's an outside chance if you send me a message, you might hear from my VA, Violetta. but I still, you know, if you've got questions or if you want to talk, by all means, feel free to reach out and be persistent and you'll get a hold of me.
There you go. Yeah, you're a busy guy running the rentals, the land, you sound like me. You've got five different balls in the air, juggling them. And Seth, any closing thoughts you want to share with us?
I just encourage, you know, whatever people want to do with their life, whether it's land or some other investing opportunity, you know, time is fleeting. Give it a shot, you know, and try to be smart about it, because there's a lot that can go wrong. But I think most people, if they are, you know, an MD or if they're smart enough to get that far, they're going to do pretty well. You just have to sort of give it a good try and see where it goes.
There you go. Great advice. Well, thank you, Seth, so much for being with us. And that, my friends, wraps up another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. You love it? Make sure to check out the website, drfreedompodcast.com, or of course, always leaving a rating really helps the podcast and it'd mean a lot to me. If you could have questions, reach out to me, dave@drfreedompodcast.com. And remember, my friends, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. All right, my friends. Well, that was the show for today. I hope you loved it. And I just want to give you one more reminder. My newest book, The Young Physician's Guide to Money and Life, is available right now. $25. You get the sun, the moon, the stars, all kinds of bonuses, $100 worth of priceless knowledge. Are you ready to go and pick this book up? If so, you're going to want to get it from me and get all those bonuses by texting DocBook, that's DocBook, to 44222, or going to the website drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. Again, snag your copy now by texting DocBook, that's all one word, to 44222, or going to drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook.